You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan O'Dell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt!
Once again, I will have to bleep that, and the people at home will have no idea what you said.
But you know what? You left the door wide open there. It was so easy. How could I not take it? I got to keep you on your toes, buddy.
Now, okay. I'm having a good day.
Good.
You and I are, we're talking Star Trek. We're talking Star Trek Voyager.
Always good.
I am having a good day, but here's the thing. I had a troubled past a couple of days ago. A good friend of mine and a good friend of yours... And also my podcasting partner in my other show, The Nerd Party, Matt Hansen. Great guy, fantastic individual, has great taste. Follow him on Twitter at mhansen0207.
That's the number, not the letter. It's 0207.
0207, thank you. Here's the thing. He is reading Star Trek Pathways right now, and he's not enjoying it.
Boy, I was wondering if you were going to bring this up. This was an interesting Twitter conversation, and I recommend that all of our listeners go to either your Twitter feed or his Twitter feed and follow it as it happened, because it is quite entertaining.
I was floored because Matt used to host his own Voyager podcast.
He did. Yes, several years.
Several years, and you used to be on that show.
I was in its earlier days, and what they did is they went through every single Star Trek Voyager episode, and they just recently finished earlier this year and finally concluded with Endgame.
They just concluded. They went on for 4 years. And so, I mean, Matt's a big Voyager fan. He loves Voyager, loves Janeway, loves the crew. I mean, he has his likes and his dislikes, just like you and I.
Who doesn't?
I was floored when he said that he was bored with Pathways.
That's such a shame, right?
Our listeners know that we are obsessed with that book. That book and Mosaic, because they came out around the same time, right?
Close. Mosaic came out, I think, a year and a half before Pathways did, but they were in very quick succession because Mosaic was such a success.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably more obsessed with Mosaic than you are, and you're probably a little more obsessed with Pathways than I am, but either way, they were written by Jerry Taylor.
Right.
And they go into the backstories of our beloved characters, and how can you not appreciate that, Matt?
I know, and here's the thing, is that for those of you who don't know and are just listening to the show for the first time, Char and I are obsessed with them. Mosaic is all about Janeway, Pathways about the rest of the crew. And the storyline of Pathways is that all of the senior staff except for Janeway are on this prison colony.
Essentially.
Okay? Essentially, you know, like they're trying to survive. Food is scarce. Clean water is scarce. There's natural barriers all around them. They get an influx of new prisoners every day. Not every, you know, often. And so in order to pass the time and also kind of keep their spirits up, each one tells their story about where they came from or about what it was like when they were kids or how they joined the Maquis or how they joined Starfleet. I thought it was a fantastic framing device of them literally sitting around a campfire and telling their own story one by one. And Matt just thought it was boring. He said, he's like, I only care how they came to Voyager. I don't care about anything else. And I was like, no, what? No.
Yeah. Okay. If you care about how they got onto Voyager, how can you not care about what happened prior to that? That leads up to Voyager.
Absolutely.
I don't understand where he's really coming from myself. And so I guess I'm taking your side on this one. Like, dude, really? Are you sure? You got to really think again. homie. I just can't agree with you. But nevertheless, the Twitter conversation was hilarious, and so everybody needs to go read it.
Before we move on to our actual topic, I do want to say one thing, is that he said that like he just thought the whole plot device and everything was so boring behind it. And I said, I was like, really? Like, they're in a prison complex, they're trying to find food, they're trying to find water, there's flamethrowers and cannibalism, and yet he's saying it's a big snore.
I can see why he thinks it's basic, because it is. It's very simple framework to set this up, and that is not what's interesting about it. Mm-hmm. It's the backstories. It's setting the framework for that. That's fine. You can make that as simple or as complex as you want, but the real point is to learn about where everybody came from, and if you're not appreciating that, well then, to heck with you.
I guess it's not the book for you. It's a brief conversation, but anyway, like, besides even that, just checking out the conversation, you guys should find us on Twitter, pitch us ideas for the show. You can find me at The Insane Robin.
And you can find me at Oh The Profanity.
Well, all right. Well, how about we get into our topic? Let's start the show.
Let's start the show.
So we teased last week that we were going to be talking about Ashes to Ashes, which is from season 6, episode 18, first aired March 1st in the good old year of 2000. And
the year 2000. You remember that?
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, that was on Conan when he was still on NBC.
Yeah, back in the days when it was late night with Conan O'Brien.
Back in the day. Now, mm-hmm. Here's the thing, is that with our rewrites, we try not to do the best episodes. We try not to do the worst episodes. We try to do just straight down the line, just like episodes or just okay episodes or episodes that are usually forgotten after the first couple of minutes of the closing credits.
Like Rise, which we did a commentary on very recently, and I have forgotten all that happened.
I feel like that's what happens with Ashes to Ashes. Ashes to Ashes, I feel like this could have been so much more. I feel like this could have tied into the show a whole lot more, had a lot more continuity, and I think the ending could have had a lot more punch. I don't know. I mean, like, we'll get into it, but I mean, I think that's why we chose the show, and also we wanted to focus on something in the later in the series, because it's easy to focus on the beginning or the middle.
In a way, yeah. I don't know. I know personally, I know those episodes a little better than I do the latter season episodes, because I've watched them that much more mm-hmm. over time, because I had those video cassettes way back when and watched them incessantly, whereas in the later years, I've not had maybe quite as much time or did not make as much time to watch them as incessantly. Now, I thought this was a little more of an episode that was a little better than mediocre, just a tiny bit above average, a little better than the fare we typically choose. I don't mm-hmm. dislike this episode, but I do agree that it had a lot of potential to do more. They opened some really cool avenues here.
Yes, I agree. I think you phrased it better than I did. I think this wasn't a bad episode. This was just kind of like a okay. Like this was less eh and more okay for me, if that makes sense.
A little less eh, a little more mm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like okay, all right, cool. Yeah, all right, good. Moving on. You know, not something I'm gonna write my mother about, but I can get on board. But I think you and I can pump it up even more, and people seem to like our rewrites. And since I'm hosting this episode, I'm taking the lead. I am now saying you have to go first.
Because you are in charge, you're going to make me go first. I can deal with that. All right. Well, this episode rewrite for me, the process of it, I'm going to preface my rewrite with the process of how it happened a little bit, because when I started coming up with ideas, just after I'd finished watching the episode and taking some notes, what I ended up doing, and I didn't even realize it to start, was that I was putting the story for Unforgettable into this story for Ashes to Ashes. And I'm like, no, that's a horrible story, and you're going to write a horrible story on this story? No, Char, bad writer, bad. No, start over. So here's what happened when I refocused my energies on the A-plot, aka the Lindsay Ballard story. One thing that I really liked, and the reason why I sort of started with the Unforgettable nudge in with it, is the fact that I liked the Harry and Lindsay Ballard chemistry. She seems like a very personable person, easy to get along with, somebody that I see is very compatible with Harry, and so I kind of dug it. The way I twisted it around is this. Lindsay Ballard was not a former member of the crew, because something about this episode really bothers me, and it's the fact that, okay, we didn't really know her. She died 3 years ago. searched around for Voyager in the last 6 months in this timeline in season six, and then actually found Voyager? How does that make sense? It's not like Voyager has been just farting around this whole time, okay? And even if they shot her torpedo tube at warp speed, there's no way that she managed to search around in that short amount of time and actually come up and find Voyager. That just does not seem true to me. So she is not a former crew member in my story because I have to solve that problem. I have to move on from it. So she's not a former member of the crew, but she's an alien they encountered who had started developing a deep friendship with Harry. They just had a really strong connection. Not necessarily a romance, just really good connection with friends. She had died for whatever reason, some kind of risky thing. You could make something up. Voyager went on its way after things were done. You know, you can insert whatever kind of ad-libbed trope you want. Fast forward to about 6 weeks later, and she's back. And she finds Voyager, she's on the view screen, and Harry is understandably spooked. And this story would have... she would have remembered Voyager's crew, obviously, what was happening 6 weeks ago, but the crew knows nothing about her. They don't remember her. But she has enough evidence to the contrary that suggests she really does know what she's talking about. And so, you know, she starts hanging out with Harry just a tiny bit, and over time we kind of see a little bit of... them starting a romance that's rooted in their deep connection, kind of like how it is in the show where it's like, you know, I just want to kiss you right now. And it kind of goes off from there. The crew starts befriending her because she has such a warm and good, kind nature. She has a good sense of humor. So people like her. She's a likable person. She even impresses Lieutenant Torres with a quick repair in engineering. And it shows that she has some mad skills. She's just an awesome person. It's like, it looks like she will join the crew because she would be a really valuable asset. So regardless of this weird thing where they don't remember her and she remembers them, she kind of is proving herself to be somebody that could, you know, she'd be a decent person to have aboard. But her people come back with a case of brain bleach all of a sudden. They come on strong and they're accusing Voyager of kidnapping Lindsay and threatening to use all force necessary to get her back. But she manages to make her way onto the bridge, somehow, and tell them the truth that she came to Voyager at first in hopes that she could eventually ask Voyager to help her people. But then she got so involved with her life, you know, she got so excited with being on Voyager that she eventually became focused on doing what she needed to do, which is making as many memories as possible in hopes that she could eventually uncover information that would eventually help herself and then relay it to her people. And she didn't think her people would track her down as quickly as they did, and she thought they might have just presumed her as lost and taken a little more time. Far from it, and the reason why is that every member of Lindsay's species is incredibly valuable to them. The reason why she was hunting down for memories and trying to absorb as much as possible is that this culture deals with death and memories in a really unique way. They start with a new identity after regenerating the bodies of those that become deceased. And instead of reproducing and creating an offspring like we do, they use the bodies they have as hosts. Kind of like the Trill, only it's one body, no symbiont, and they're using the same bodies over and over. And they gain memories in that body until the person's life cycle is complete, and then that person's memories are committed to a great memory bank, essentially. It contains all of the history of the lives of the members of that culture, and then scholars study it.
All right, like before we go on, because I'm paying attention.
Okay.
And I like what you're saying so far, but all right, so I just want to make it clear for the audience and also for me. So they reuse the bodies over and over again of their own culture?
Yes.
Or do they go out and steal dead bodies like in the original episode?
No.
So they reuse bodies over and over again, but it's a new consciousness each time.
Right, because they want the body to experience a new individual. They want to have as many and varied experiences as possible to gain as much knowledge. And all of this is in pursuit, we later find out, to actually try and find a way to keep their race going. Because since they cannot reproduce normally, they've only got so many hundreds of bodies left. Because eventually some have been destroyed, they've got to do something, or otherwise all that's going to be left of this culture is their great memory bank. And that's going to be their legacy. That's it. So okay. Does that all make sense? I know I was talking there for a long time, so I'm really glad that you cut in, actually.
Well, okay, so how do they get those memories back?
You mean after somebody dies?
So the people come back? So they send the people out to get memories, and then do those people come back?
Essentially, but the thing is they don't stray too far, usually. Like, Lindsay is an exception. A lot of times people come to their world, but they don't necessarily go out too much. But they are advanced. They are probably on a technological level similar to the Federation.
So they sent Lindsay out, but yet she went too far.
No.
And she didn't plan on... Okay.
She escaped. She wanted to get back to Voyager, just like she did in the original episode. But she tried to make it look like she had just gotten lost, maybe, so that that would delay the time it would take for them to go out and find her. But lo and behold... It's a big deal if they lose somebody, and so they really tracked her down faster than she anticipated.
Okay.
Okay?
I think so. Okay.
Okay. So, the problem, though, with the whole thing was that when Lindsay was regenerated, because remember, she died when Voyager was around for whatever reason, not all of her memories were wiped completely, sort of like how it was in the original episode, and she remembered Harry and Voyager. And apparently, such lapses in the wiping of memory have become more commonplace in the culture because it's due to them reusing these same bodies for countless generations, and the process is beginning to fail them. So not only are they losing, like, or not only do they not have the ability to reproduce, but their process of continuing is now actually getting a little bit convoluted because some memories are staying and others are new, and it's going to get harder and harder to separate things. And this whole idea of creating a brand new identity is slowly becoming harder to achieve. It's just getting a little mixed up, and it's not working as well as it used to. What happens is that Lindsay's father has, come after her to retrieve her and bring her back to their people because they simply cannot lose her. And Voyager, since she died the first time, they're a little bit too dangerous to be hanging around. Lindsay's father, like, eventually they convince her. Rather, maybe she convinces him that this time the brain bleach isn't necessary on the Voyager crew, as long as they will remember Lindsay fondly. The reason why they use the brain bleach on Voyager's crew is because of the whole death thing. Their people don't want to be remembered in that sense. You know, memories are this really sacred thing, and so to have bad memories was just no. They're going to Men in Black you and swipe it, and no, we're not going to do that. But she needs to return to her old life, since Voyager's not planning on staying close. And initially she protests, arguing that she could learn so much more on Voyager, but then Janeway kind of comes up with a compromise. Well, what about an information exchange? Because they do have medical technology that's a little different from this species. She'd be willing to maybe have an exchange of information, and then Lindsay can help interpret it, and she can also stay in touch with Harry, because that's her final condition. Janeway kind of nods to Harry and Lindsay, okay, that's all right. And so he's lost his shot at a decent romance once again, but she has to go back and do her thing and do the best that she can to save her people. That's the A plot. The B plot is the Borg kids, and it is certainly less than thrilling. The way that I would spice this up a little bit is this. Like, when Seven arrives with the kids to play Connect Four with Neelix and Naomi or whatever that was, I say it's Connect Four, Neelix suggests to Seven that maybe she should give the kids a selection of activities to choose from so that they can pick what they like best. You know, they don't all have to do the same thing. This actually would help them enhance their individuality. And Seven asks if he thinks the kids should forget about being former Borg as much as they can. Maybe thinking that's the direction where he's trying to go. And Neelix says, no, it's not about forgetting who they were. It's about who they'll become. That's essentially the moral of the B plot. In the same way that Seven has been exploring her own individuality, the kids are all going to discover what makes them happy, and it won't be the same thing for each of them. And for some of them, like the twins, for instance, they might cling to their former Borg lives a little more strictly, whereas, say, Mizzotti, the Borg girl, might be more of a free spirit and have no reservations about doing what she wants. So we'll see Seven struggle with this more than the kids throughout the B plot, and they're actually going to demonstrate to her that they're not going to forget where they came from, but also that becoming who they are is just as important, or who they're going to be is just as important. So, like, for instance, with the clay sculptures, Seven sees how giving the kids the parameter of a geometric shape at the very end it might have actually limited their level of creativity. So, yes, all the kids but Mizodi followed directions, but Seven actually considers for the first time that following directions wasn't necessarily the point of the exercise. And it gives her something to think about in her approach to activities with the kids. We give a quizzical look to Seven, maybe a little close-up, and then some cute music plays, and we fade off.
Okay.
That's my story!
Okay. Now, I'm sensing a lot of unforgettable in this.
I know there still is, right? I'm sorry. I tried to make it better, but there is still a grain of it.
Now, it's... But the thing, like, this episode, Ashes to Ashes, the original, already had a lot of unforgettable in that, you know?
Maybe that's where it was coming from.
I feel like your changes to Ashes to Ashes... Like, I feel like Ashes to Ashes had the same structure as Unforgettable, and mm-hmm. they just tweaked it a little bit to differentiate it. I feel like your tweaks to Ashes to Ashes might have made it more, like, reverted back more to Unforgettable.
So what you're saying is that I ultimately made it worse? It's okay if that's what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. I think
my first draft was that exactly, and I just thought, look at what I've done.
Well, I think, like, you and I always thought that Unforgettable was very much forgettable.
Yes.
And we're not saying that just to be cute. Like, that's just really what, like, we're
that's
so,
just the truth.
That's just the truth. And so I'm not saying that what you did was inherently bad to Ashes to Ashes. I'm just saying that those tweaks, if they were standing alone, would have been an incredibly interesting episode. But all it makes me think of is Unforgettable, but with a much better cultural twist. Now, would you focus more on the romance between Lindsay and Kim, or would you focus more on the struggle of their people?
I would start off with their friendship slash developing into a romance, as she befriends the crew and it becomes apparent that she would be an awesome addition to the crew. Maybe in the future, if I were writing it, as a potential minor character who would pop up every now and again if she had stayed. But then the other half is all about their culture. And in fact, I would say a good majority of it's going to be their culture, because that's where I actually came up with some original meat to the story.
Okay. Would you keep the whole Catherine Janeway, Lindsay thing going on?
I really don't care if Catherine burns the pot roast, so not necessarily. We know she's a bad cook. We don't have to see it. I mean, it's a cute scene, but it really doesn't do that much for me in the end. How about you?
No, I mean, yeah, I think I'm the same way, where it's a cute scene, but, you know, can it be lost? Absolutely. I don't think it really adds too terribly much to it.
I'll leave it out there in the ether, and I have a feeling I might be getting some comments this week, and that's fine. I will try to address them the best that I can.
Well, I feel like, here's the thing, is that you developed a really, here's the thing, I'm not trying to be overly critical here, but I think that you came up with
No, be overly critical.
You came up with a really interesting tidbit to the story that I feel like could be the vast majority of the episode.
Right.
I feel like if you weren't burdened by the main structure of Ashes to Ashes, I feel like you could have created a much better episode if you focused on what you wanted the Kabali to be. Where, uh-huh. like, this is their plight. It's a combination of Unforgettable and Trill. Okay?
You're right.
You know, where it's, they're xenophobic, and they're not xenophobic, but they, like,
no.
They have their methods, they have a limited population, and they send them out almost like the shapeshifters, almost like where they send out the 100,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like how important Odo was to those people. The female shapeshifter said, I would give up 1,000 Alpha Quadrants if it meant getting Odo back home, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Something to that effect. I kind of feel like, if you combined that essence with what you want the Kabali to be, that's your story.
I have to agree with you, yes. Like, I didn't want to completely chuck Ashes to Ashes because I did like it. And so I think in a way, you're onto something where if I were in the writer's room and I pitched this idea, this is exactly what would get focused on, and this is what would ultimately make it a better, more original story. And then this other crap would just get chucked.
Yeah. I think that's, like, if we were rewriting, like, really rewriting the story, I think, like, and if I was your writing partner or producer, mm-hmm. I would say, focus on that, get rid of all that other stuff, and build a story around that.
You're absolutely right.
That's what I would say to you.
That is why you are my podcasting partner in crime, because we work well with that structure. I can bring an idea to the table and you're going to make it 10 times better and hopefully, maybe, vice versa. Which now leads into your rewrite. I am now dying to know what you would do with Ashes to Ashes, because it sounds like you really could blow this thing up.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, because I really like what you did with the culture aspect, because my rewrite is much simpler.
Okay.
My rewrite is much more, and I kind of take this approach with a lot of our rewrites, is that I mainly look at the rewrite as a way to do punch up. And one thing, like right off the bat, the first thing I would do, the absolute first change I would do, is get rid of Lindsay Ballard. It's not Lindsay Ballard anymore, okay? It's Annie Jatel.
Okay.
From Leighton Image.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So for those of you who don't remember, Leighton Image is the episode where the doc discovers that some of his memory files were erased. Those memory files that were erased, he was slowly getting them back. And it turns out that it was a conspiracy of the senior staff of Voyager to erase the doc's memory because he lost a patient. There was Kim and Annie Jatel on a shuttle mission. They both got blasted with some sort of weird phaser beam. And they both came back to sickbay, and Doc only had enough time to save one of them. And he chose to save Harry Kim. And so Jatel, am I saying her name? Jatel, excuse me. I want to say Jatrell, and I'm combining it.
Jatel, yeah.
Jatel died. And Doc had an existential crisis. He had no idea what to do with himself. Like, his programming was all kind of all messed up and weird. And he just had a meltdown, breakdown, nervous breakdown, if you will. He said, he's like, what am I supposed to do? I was like, they had an equal chance to survive. Which one would you choose? He kept going around like to Neelix and saying like, okay, which one, what would you do? Tell me what you would do. He said, he's like, did I pick Harry Kim because he was my friend? And he was like, that's not what a good doctor does. So, you know, he couldn't function. And that's why Janeway and crew erase his memory. But he had to face it head on with this. And this happened, even though this episode happened in season 5, episode 11, but it said that it took place between season 3 and 4, somewhere around in there, when Jatel actually died. And that's about the same time that Lindsay Ballard was supposed to die.
Right.
Because they said that she died 3 years ago. So we're in season 6, like at the end of season 6, and she died 3 years ago. That would be the end of season 3, the same time Annie Jatel died.
Absolutely.
Why not add some continuity and have her? It doesn't even have to be the same actress, okay? It doesn't matter. It does not have to be the same actress, just the same character, okay? And so with that in mind, if she's the one who comes back, same storyline, same Kabali, whatever, like they changed her DNA, resurrected from her photon torpedo tube, and she is in search of Voyager, she finds Voyager, and it's all about her trying to reacclimate. But the thing is, instead of wasting time with Janeway, we replace that time with the doc.
Okay.
Because the doc, obviously, like, I still want to keep the Harry Kim romance, but I think the Harry Kim romance is kind of secondary to the doctor's storyline in this one.
Given the circumstances, I have to agree.
Right, given the circumstances. Even though I really like the Harry Kim storyline in Ashes to Ashes, I think it needs to take a backseat. So I kind of want to get rid of the Borg storyline because I don't care.
Nah.
I think that's a fine B plot, but if we need to cut it for time, let's cut it for time.
Yeah.
And so let's have Harry Kim's romance with Jatel be the B plot. He's like, I thought I lost you. I can't believe I get a second chance. And so we see her, that it's just another avenue for her to reacclimate with the crew. And so she's trying to come back on board, and Doc is freaking out.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, at first He's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I went through multiple breakdowns because of this. I cannot believe that you came back. I never thought this was going to happen. You know, prayers answered, everything like that. He makes it his goal, his mission, to reacclimate her to the crew, to change her appearance, to, like, it's not just, oh, I can totally, like, I can't change your physiology, but I can change your appearance. Like, this is not just an afterthought. This is his goal. This is his mission. Mm-hmm. I am not, like, he is not going to rest until he figures this out. It's a problem he has to solve. And so we see her try to get back to the crew. She still has the same interactions with B'Elanna and Kim and everything like that. But the thing is that I never really, The thing that I did not like about Ashes to Ashes is that I don't feel... I know you can only do so much in 42 minutes, but yeah. I didn't feel like enough time was given where she's like, you know what? I totally can't fit in. You know, like, everything's... And, like, it's not so much that the crew has changed, it's that I've changed. And I was like, yeah, you've changed, but you've gave it, like, a couple of days, okay? It's gonna take longer. You yes. were dead. You died 3 years ago. You're literally a different species now. How about we give it more than just a night's sleep? You know, like figuring out if you're gonna stay on Voyager. So I think it's not so much, because here's the thing, is that when she's in engineering and she starts talking in Kabbali, everyone's staring at her and like, oh my God, she spoke in Kabbali. This is the 24th century. We're yeah. in space.
Would okay? it really be that weird?
Would it really be that weird to hear a different language?
No.
Everybody who's there knows who that character is. They're like, oh, that's the dead girl. Okay, so she's probably just getting used to her new skin, you know? And so I feel like in the 24th century, that would be no big deal. So in my cut, in my rewrite, things have to be punched up. Things have to be a little bit more dramatic. It's not just her slipping in and out of her new native tongue. I know that's an oxymoron, but you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Like doing things the Kabbali way, where it's a little bit kind of like the Maquis way, you know, in Learning yeah. Curve, where she just goes and does things. And maybe it's more cultural than just language, where like B'Elanna tells her to do something and she's like, no, that's the wrong way. So I'm just going to go do this. And maybe it's like she can't acclimate to the command structure. And maybe she even gets a little violent, like where her demeanor is completely different. Like her disposition is completely different. And it's not just like, oh, I'm a different person because I eat gray paste now. I'm a different person because my personality has changed. Even though I have some of these latent memories of Voyager, I am a different person. Not just on the outside, but on the inside. But there are still those pieces make her attracted to Kim, where Kim tries to, you know, do the whole ice skating thing where he said, he's like, listen, I need you around. I don't care if you're different. I mean, there's still that little bit inside of you of... I keep wanting to say Lindsay, but Jatral or whatever. And
Jatral, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't. A J, like Mrs. J.
Some J word.
Yeah. and so like maybe that's where like maybe Kim pushes her a little too much.
Mm.
Where he says he's like, no, we'll get you back. Okay. You know, like she's getting pulled from both sides where like Doc tries to use the medical way and Kim tries to use the psychological way. Where Doc's like, no, I'm going to get all your memories back. I'm going to get all your physiology back. And you have to come in 10 times a day, you know, in order to make this happen. And she just can't stand it.
Yeah.
And then Kim is like, no, we're going to go to the holodeck. We're going to recreate some past missions. Okay. And remember, you did this on this mission. So let's recreate that. And you said you told this joke on this mission. Or remember that time that we went back to the mess hall and, you know, Tom totally spilled his beer all over his lap, you know, like, and so... He's trying to recreate all these moments and she just can't remember. She gets frustrated. She starts screaming at him. Maybe she gets a little heated to the point where like Kim's a little scared, like, whoa, okay. Like
you're like, wow, okay. Didn't mean to hit a nerve.
Yeah, the Mrs. J I knew would never have done that, you know. Like throwing my ice skates up against the wall where it, you know, like it like you know, she throws it so hard it just gets stuck in the wall.
Toe pick.
Stuff like that, where she gets a little you know, a little heated, a little violent, a little non-Starfleet. Okay? It's not just a language barrier. That just wasn't enough for me. And it, you know, like we proceed with the story where, you know, like she has this conversation with the doc and like she keeps going and she's like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I cannot keep coming in here. When is it going to be over? And he said, I don't know. He said, I don't know when it's going to be over, but I can guarantee you that it won't be over until I'm finished. And she's like, I can't live like this. And she goes to Kim and Kim's like, listen, we're going to bring back that person that I fell in love with. And she's like, this is the person I am now. I've changed. I want to be here. But if you can't accept me for who I am now, then I don't know if I can be here. And then the Kabbali come and that whole thing ensues. And they're like, I want you back. But there needs to be a little bit something more in there because... I didn't like the ending. I thought it was a little easy because we all knew that this woman was not going to stay.
Right.
You know, we knew like we were not going to add a new senior staff. And even if she did stay, we probably weren't going to see her again because of the climate of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's the point of making her stay? And so I wanted, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I wanted to make it a little bit less attractive for her to go back.
Hmm, okay.
So it is like I don't want it to be like a familia connection where it's her father. I want it to be more of like a government connection where it's just like, listen, you are now like you are a citizen of the Kabali. You have responsibilities. And she's like, I never chose those responsibilities. You stole my body. You stole my identity. And he said, he's like, this is what we do. This is how we do it. And you just have, like, everybody's righteous from their perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're no different. And she's like, I don't want, like maybe in this world, like, everybody has a job. And everyone has, you come in and, like, you have to live here. You have to do this job. And it's for the betterment of the community. It's for the betterment of our society. And she's like, I don't want to do this. I want to be my own person, even though you completely ravaged who I was. Kim and the doc want her to be who she was. The Kabali want her to be who they made her to be. Mm-hmm. And so Mrs. J has no idea who she is. She has no idea where she's going to go. She's like, I don't want to go back to the Kabali. I don't think I can stay with the Voyager. I'm not fitting in whatsoever.
She's got to deal with who she is. Okay, can I interject with a quick question?
Go for it.
At this point in her medical treatment, how much does she look like her former self?
I think it's kind of the same where she looks like her former self, but the physiology still Kabali. And so...
Okay. Because here's my thought with this whole thing is, what would really get me if I were a Voyager crew member is seeing the face of somebody who was dead for 3 years suddenly live and in front of me again. It would take a little bit of getting used to on that. And I think that would freak people out a little more than what we saw in the show.
I think that would be a good addition too. Showing showing the 24th century crew falter, you know, where it's like not everybody is as welcoming because they can't adjust to it. They're like, you're dead. I buried you. You were my friend. You are not the Mrs. J that I knew.
Right.
You know, like we could show some of that rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be great.
Side characters.
And it would also give a little more of a dilemma too. Well, do I go back to looking more like my mm-hmm. current self, or do I go to continue looking more like my past self and just hope that eventually I fit in?
I think that's great. I think that's a great addition. And how I ended it, though, like I originally ended it with her killing herself.
Oh, brutal.
Where she could not stand it anymore. But then I was just like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't, like, because Enterprise did it. Obviously, this would have been before Enterprise, but...
Yeah, but you're thinking of Cogenitor, right?
I am thinking exactly of Cogenitor.
I love that episode, and in a way, I wish you would have kept it, but please continue and tell me what you did, and then we'll talk about it when you're done.
Well, here's the reason why. Like, originally, I was just like, she's going to kill herself, and everybody has to deal with what they did. The Kabali have to deal with, they pushed her too hard, they stole her identity, they had no right. Mm-hmm. Kim is going to have to live with the frustration of knowing that he pushed her to this. And Doc, this is the main reason why I did not do it, because Doc will have to repeat this existential crisis that he went through.
You're right, because he too was pushing her.
And also, like, if she killed herself, he would go, this is my fault. If I made the right decision, or if I lived up to, you know, if I didn't kill her, she wouldn't have killed herself again. You know, like she wouldn't have been dead again. I have to go through this again. It was just too much. And so what I did, like how I'm changing it now, is she gets in her craft and goes. Voyager doesn't know where she went. The Kabali doesn't know where she went. And she does it in a way where we know that they will not find her. She's Ooh. Like, I have to find a new home, non-human home, non-Kabali home. I need to make my own way. She's gone. They'll never see her again. So Kim has to live with that. He's like, I pushed her away. This was her real home. And Jane was like, I don't think it was anymore. The Kabali are like, we're going to pursue her no matter what. And they kind of let her know. They let the Kabali know. She used a techity tech. You're never going to find her. And then we have the doc where, you know, like maybe Kim and the doc are talking, and they're talking about Mrs. J, and they, you know, Kim's like, are you going to be okay? Like, I will get over this in time, but are we going to lose you again, doc? And he goes, he's like, no, he's like, you're not going to lose me, because when she died, that was it. She was gone and we never got her back. A miracle happened and we got her back. Now, I wish she was here. I wish I could have helped her. But knowing that she's out there, that she's living, that she's doing her own thing, she's living her life by her own set of rules and by her own parameters, that makes it okay. And I don't think many doctors get that same kind of second chance that I did. And then that's the end of the episode.
Okay. I take back what I said. She definitely didn't need to kill herself. That's so much better!
I think what that does is like, some people didn't like how Leighton Image ended because it was open-ended. I liked how Leighton Image ended because it was ambiguous, and I thought it was just like, okay, it's not over because it takes time.
Right.
And so this shows that time, and now we get to see that ending.
Yeah, and it's growth on the Doctor's end, and yes, he does get that second chance, and yes, she is gone, but yet not. But even so, right, he's got that perspective shift that would be really nice to see. And yeah, the aftermath of her killing herself, had you gone that route, it would have just been a repeat of the Doc, because he would not have been able to have handled it, I don't think.
Right.
Not in that context.
Yeah.
Not in that context. So you took the right route, and I really like the way that goes, because it's got a great message in the story then. Mm-hmm. Which is to live life on your own terms. It doesn't matter what you were or what people want you to be. You've got to be you.
That, I think that right there, that's the summation. That's it right there. You got to live your own life. It doesn't matter what you were or what people want you to be. You got to live your own life.
Exactly. So
that's perfect.
I love your story.
Thank you.
That is, as you say, the amped up version of Ashes to Ashes. Same kind of story, basically, but mm-hmm. with much more drama and a much better story overall, much more entertaining, and a little more thoughtful.
Well, thank you very much. That's very, very complimentary.
Well, you did a fine job, and I feel like a horrible, horrible non-writer. I'm a hack writer at this point
no.
for doing the unforgettable rewrite. I'm just...
No, you have a great story. You needed to be free from your chains that was Ashes to Ashes and Unforgettable.
Well, I didn't quite break free, but you did, and that's a great way to end our episode. So, Ashes to Ashes is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So now we're going to have to spend like a half an hour talking about these Star Trek comics when I could be reading Star Wars comics.
Yes.
I hope the listeners appreciate the sacrifices that we're making to bring this moderately entertaining podcast to them.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The Orb.
Also, the original title of this episode was A Matter of Breeding, which, when we talk about things feeling TNG-ish, that could have been a Riker episode.
The Ready Room.
It's about people and feelings and emotions. It's about philosophy. It's about the future. It's about hope. It's about glory. It's about intellectual promise. That's what Axanar is about. It is not a story about pew, pew, pew. I promise you that.
To the journey! Well, you telling me that I need to make love to this alien woman or she's going to die? Well, for king and country, you know what I'm saying?
Right, only on Star Trek.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But you would never pick up on that based on the way that it plays out, aside from the fact that they explicitly tell you in the dialogue, you know?
The 602 Club.
The prequels are the most autobiographical works that Lucas has done. Because if you follow Anakin's arc, he comes onto the scene, nobody's seeing him coming, and then he's a wunderkind, but he doesn't know what to do with it, and he's overwhelmed and feels a bit trapped.
Literary Treks.
Deep Space Nine, among all the Star Trek series, is the one that really, over time, and I'm talking about now on the television series, not just in the books, changed the most.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
My absolute favorite thing about this episode is that this is a love potion only if it's between a man and a woman. They make it explicitly clear that if you touch two men or two women, they just become really good friends.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have 20 freaking Trek FM shows coming to you every single day of the week. That is amazing, and we want to thank all of those of you on Patreon who help support all of our shows and keep them coming to you. That takes care of the cost to produce and store and create the bandwidth for all of this stuff. We especially want to thank our associate producers on TTJ, and those lovely people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, and Aaron Harvey. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. And if you haven't checked this out, please consider becoming a monthly subscriber and helping us out as well. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Now, before we go, there's one more way we need to tell you all about how you can help support us. And this one doesn't really cost you a thing except maybe 5 minutes of your time. And that's to leave us an iTunes review. That helps us climb up the ladder of the rankings and helps other people find the podcast. And we've got a good thing going here, and it only keeps getting better and better. So we have one person to thank this week who not only left us a 5-star rating in the US iTunes store, but also wrote us a lovely review. And that is a person with a fantastic username. This person is John Luck Pickard.
Nice.
Yeah, I love it. So that is fantastic. Thank you very much, John Luck Pickard. We really appreciate it. And if you haven't left us the rating, please do so. It helps us out immensely, and it's one of the best ways that you can help us out. So, with all of that said, buddy, we are done with this one. What are we off to next week?
Next week, we're doing a list episode, and we love our lists here on To the Journey. Mm-hmm. And what it is our favorite moments from season 5, our top 5 favorite moments from season 5. It's not what we consider the best moments of season 5. It's not what we consider the most integral to the overall arcing story of Voyager. It is our favorite. It's what tickles us, what interests us. And so, but you'll have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!